You're listening to the Headbangers Mix on OutboundMusic.com. Your source for hard rock and heavy metal music. OutboundMusic.com.
Hi, this is Harold Abbott from the Scorpions. You're listening to Tina on The Big Rock Show.
All my life it's been rock and roll.
Hi, this is Roger Earl of Foghat, and you're listening to Tina Peak on The Big Rock Show.
Sun is rising, got my baby.
Welcome to season 6 of The Big Rock Show with your host, Tina Peak.
Yeah.
New episodes, new music, and new interviews. For more information, check out thebigrockshow.net.
Hey friends, welcome to The Big Rock Show. Triumph's 1981 release, Allied Forces, was the album where it all came together for these Canadian prog metalists. Great compositions, great performances, and great album design. Back when album designs mattered. And joining me today is Mike Levine, a founding member and bassist of Triumph. I'll be asking Mike to take a trip down memory lane with us as Allied Forces is being reissued as a 30th anniversary vinyl edition. The release date was supposed to coincide with Triumph's 30th anniversary, which the band celebrated on September 19th. But I hear that the date's been pushed back, and we'll find out from Mike about that and a whole lot more, including, as always, whether the guys have been talking about getting together to do a tour. And in recognition of Allied Forces being reissued on vinyl, I'll be playing a couple of songs off that terrific album, an album that has gone on to sell an impressive 2.5 million copies worldwide. And funny enough, when I stopped by the official Triumph website, I noticed the band have a poll going on. What's your favorite Triumph song? And guess what? Fight the Good Fight came in first with 28% of the votes, and Lay It on the Line is just slightly edging out Magic Power by a mere 5 votes. So in honor of all you diehard Triumph fans, I'm going to give you what you want. I'm going to play Fight the Good Fight in just a sec, but make sure you stay tuned after my chat with Mike, because I'll be playing Magic Power after the interview. Both songs are from 1981's Allied Forces. And even if you've heard them 100 times before, it doesn't matter, because hearing anything from Triumph never gets old. So let's get this show going, as voted by Triumph fans and one of the most beloved and enduring arena rock anthems. Here is Fight the Good Fight.
Thank you. RatPackRecords.com.
New bands for the next generation of hard rock fans.
You know their songs.
My.
Rat Pack Records.
RatPackRecords.com.
Visit RatPackRecords.com.
New bands for the next generation of hard rock fans.
Welcome to the Big Rock Show. We're going to party our tits off today. I think you know that. I know that. The American people know that. It's going to be a great program. So just go ahead and squeeze your girth and sit back and listen.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
So I'm just so glad to have you back on the Big Rock Show. I think the last time we spoke was just over a year ago.
Yeah, back in probably May of last year, I would guess.
That's exactly when it was. So what's shaking out in Toronto today?
In Toronto, it's a beautiful, sunny day.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, aren't we all, huh?
Well,
let's get this going. On September 19th, Triumph celebrated their 30th anniversary. I mean, that is so hard to believe, Mike. And to commemorate the occasion, on September 20th, the band reissued 1981's Allied Forces as a 30th anniversary vinyl edition. I've always loved vinyl, and it really proves that everything old is new again. Tell us about the decision to reissue Allied Forces and the reason for putting it on vinyl.
I wish I could take credit for any of that, but I can't. It's the guys that take care of our website wanted to do something special because it was 30 years ago that that album was released. And I said, well, that's a good idea, but what do you think we should do? And they said, well, why don't you do a vinyl edition? I went, hey, that's a really cool idea. I like that idea. You know, so basically that's when the aggravation began. As soon as I said, yeah, that was a good idea. I had to go back and find the right tapes and search through archives and find artwork and the whole nine yards. But, you know, the end product, which I just got my copy the other day, is beautiful. I mean, the artist did a sensational job on the packaging. The record sounds phenomenal. I mean, it's like just it blew my mind how great it sounds. I forgot, you know, how really good vinyl sounds.
Yeah.
It's just got so much over anything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's got depth and warmth and feel. And
yeah.
What I do miss, though, because it's on 180-gram vinyl and it's like, you know, just like they make a lot better vinyl now than they used to, I miss the kind of the hisses and the crackles and the pops that used to be on every record.
I remember those days. Well, now, I understand the album's tracks are from the original source material, and it is pressed on pristine 180-gram vinyl manufactured by Rainbow Records in Los Angeles, who really are the premier replicators of vinyl in North America. So you already mentioned a bit of difficulty. How difficult was it to put this on vinyl in 2011 as opposed to back in 1981?
Well, you know, just getting the packaging done. Like nobody makes an inner sleeve anymore for a 12-inch album, and finding a manufacturer was a nightmare. You know, and eventually the people that made the jackets agreed to do it for us. Like most vinyl that comes out now has either a paper sleeve, which is no big deal, or they do gatefolds. Right, so it's, they don't really have a printed inner sleeve, and I wanted to replicate the album just the way it was in '81, which had a really nice inner sleeve on it, you know, four color with lyrics and credits and photos and all that stuff. So it was tough to get that done. We actually had to push the release back on the album because at the pressing plant, there are presses that they only have two that do 180-gram vinyl, and one broke down, and they were waiting for parts. So they could only manufacture, like, the, I don't know, one day a couple of hundred, the next day 50 kind of thing. And so the actual release date's now October 4th on the record, but it's out there now. You know, you can find it. It's just, it'll dribble its way through the system starting now, but everybody will have it on October 4th. So that was kind of a glitch that I was not happy with, but that's the way it is. Nobody makes vinyl anymore. I think there's three manufacturers in North America, of which Rainbow's the best. So it was an interesting experience, at least.
I bet. Now, this is the album that kind of started it all for the band. Can you take us back in time, Mike, and tell us what it was like in 1981 for Triumph? Like, what was going around you guys at that time?
If I had a memory, I could tell you. You know, we had done very well in 1979 with the Just the Game album, which produced, you know, a couple of minor hits, which still are actually major hits now, right. Hold On and Lay It on the Line. And then the record company kind of got into our face and said, well, you guys got to do this or you guys got to do that. And, you know, we went through a ton of aggravation. We did Progressions of Power, which really didn't do that well. I quite liked the record, but it didn't do well commercially. So with Allied Forces, we just told the record company, stay away from us. You know, don't right. send anybody, don't call, don't write, don't send telexes, don't send, you know, anything. We just don't want to talk to you. And we had built Metalworks, which is our own studio, and this was the first album we got to record in there. So it was kind of like, hey, we're in a new studio, we don't have to worry about the time clock and the money being frittered away by the hour. And, you know, we just took our time and threw out the songs that we didn't like and just kept writing while we were in the studio until we came up with what we thought was going to be a fantastic album, which you never know until the fans get it. But at that point in time, we just said, this is it. You know, this is going to be, you know, our best foot forward. And it's going to be Triumph. It's going to be nobody else.
Right on. Now, do you have a particular memory or highlight from 1981 that you could share with us?
Boy, here we go again with the old memory test. I don't know. I mean, there was quite exciting in just the way American radio, rock radio embraced this record.
Right.
Like right from the get-go, I mean, we were on, you know, 150 stations in America, which was pretty much all of rock radio. And we had Magic Power and Fight the Good Fight in heavy rotation, and on the album radio charts, they were both in the top five. And so that was quite pleasing and quite an honor, and really that's how the band really broke big.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when you first heard your own music on the radio? Do you remember that? Do you remember the feeling?
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was on the first album, a song called Blinding Light Show, that a station in Toronto, which, you know, turned out to be a huge station, CFNY, but they were a little wee station up in Richmond Hill. And a friend of ours was a part-time jock there, and he spun the record, and I got to hear it on the radio, and I went, wow, that's amazing.
I bet.
It's on the radio, that's me.
Yeah, I bet. That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it is. And Every time you heard a new record or a new song on the radio, it was still just as exciting.
Really?
You know, you go, wow, does that ever sound great? Because, you know, I was in charge of all the production for the band, and, you know, it was, you couldn't make a record for the studio or for your own home stereo, because everybody's got a different room. Mm-hmm. So you'd make it so it would sound great on the radio. And so that was always a thrill for me when I heard it, and it sounded great. Thank God.
Is it still a thrill for you today?
Sure.
Yeah?
I don't know how to describe it. You know, when you hear something you did a long time ago, and or even recently for that matter, and it's on the radio, and you know people are listening to it, and it still sounds great, and it still holds water, you know, you just have this thrill of pride that runs through you.
Yeah.
You know, I made that record. I'm on it. I play bass on it.
Awesome. Now, you, Gil Moore, and Rick Emmett produced this one yourselves. Triumph has always tried to be more independent and have definitely been more forward-thinking than some of your counterparts. What was it like to produce this one with the three of you together?
Oh, you're talking back in 81?
Well, either that or even now. Actually, that's a good question. Say both times, between 81 and this time.
Well, those other two mopes had nothing to do with this one. You know, I was in charge of getting everything done. And they said, Mike, you just go do it. You know how to do that stuff. But back in 81, you know, we all contributed, you know, it's everybody had a role, and then everybody overlapped the roles, whether it was in the songwriting end or what I used to call the renovation end, which is, okay, you got a song, but let's try and make it better than what it is. And, you know, to the production part, which again fell in my realm of responsibility, but everybody contributed on that end. Like I'd do a mix and call Rick and Gil, come on in and listen, and they'd have suggestions, and I go, yeah, that's a good one, or that's a bad one, or let's try it and see. So, you know, it was all, we always had the kind of the three musketeers outlook on everything. It was all for one and one for all. So that's how we attacked everything. whether it was music or touring or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that's cool. Did you kind of just fall into the producing end of things, Mike? Like, how did you get into producing?
Well, back in the early days of my career, I had a small record label. I was a partner in a small record label here in Toronto. And I might have been 20 years old. But I got, you know, we raised a bunch of money from unsuspecting investors and off to New York to make records. And it was a very great learning experience for me at a young age to be in big-time studios working with big-time people in New York. So, you know, I got to cut my chops a bit there and learn a lot. So just when we decided, you know, when the band started, we had a record deal and it was time to go in the studio, everybody said, well, Mike, you produce it because you've done this before.
And do you like producing? I mean, do you like that part of the work, that end of things?
Yes and no. Okay. Sometimes it's very frustrating and other times it's great. It was great in Triumph because, you know, it wasn't just the work for hire, so to speak. You know, you're not a hired gun. It's your music and you got the responsibility for your partners, not for somebody that you may never see again as long as you live.
Right.
So it was a labor of love doing Triumph, and sometimes working with other bands, which I did do just for fun, basically. It's such an incredible headache sometimes dealing with musicians, believe me.
All right. Now, Allied Forces consists of 9 tracks and was certified platinum and has gone on to sell an impressive 2.5 million copies worldwide. What was it about this album that you feel made people sit up and take notice of Triumph?
I think it's just the quality of the material. You know, the songs were really, really good on it. We had matured as musicians. We had matured as recording musicians as well. And as performers, as vocalists, as players. And I think we put together, when you dropped the needle on that record back in 1981, you didn't want to take it off until the end of side one. And when side one ended, you want to immediately flip it over and listen to side two. And that's a testament to the quality of the music, which is not easy to do. Like, I don't envy new artists that got to come up with 15 songs to put on a CD these days. That's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have 15 great songs. So, you know, back then, all you could put on was 8 songs, basically, in order to get the record to sound any good.
Yeah.
28 per side was like the maximum you could put on, and your level would be very low with that. So, you know, maybe there's 46 minutes of music on that record, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But, you know, back then, though, when you recorded a single, when you recorded music, didn't you find, too, that there were a lot more guitar solos? You did have longer songs than, say, artists have today?
Yeah, well, guitar solos for sure. I mean, give me a new artist that there's a guitar solo on the record.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Seriously.
You know? You know, show me a superstar guitar player these days. But, you know, and not that I'm yearning for the old days, so to speak. Just that, you know, I just don't think the quality musicianship's there with a lot of bands. They might have a good song, and they might play good as a group, but where's the longevity? Where's the superstardom? I mean, we come from the era of guitar heroes.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Emmett, Eddie Van Halen, Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page. You know, if you didn't have a great guitar player, you weren't a rock band. Neil Sean and Journey. The list is endless. All the big bands have great guitar players. And why were they great? Well, because they were talented guys. You know, they put in their 10,000 hours on their instrument. And they knew how to solo and turn a crowd on. And the crowd loved guitar players.
Yeah, very true. Now, Mike, tell us about the free download card so fans can download this classic disc as well as the video directly to their digital player.
Yeah, there's a coded download card that you can inside the album that you can download as an MP3, which I sure hope you don't because the sound sucks on those things. You can also download a WAV file of the album, which is a lot better. Still not superb, but way better than MP3 file.
Mm.
And also you can download the Allied Forces video, the song from the US Festival, and those are all complimentary with your purchase of the album. They're totally free.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, you mentioned the packaging, that it's pretty wicked, and it's going to exactly mirror the original 81 vinyl version. What else can fans expect when they purchase the album, Mike, and who helped you develop the special packaging? Was there anybody else who gave you a hand with that?
Yeah, the company in Montreal, actually. It's weird. You get your records pressed in Los Angeles, but you get your jackets made in Montreal.
Really?
And shipped down there. A company called Ross Ellis. They're a huge, huge printer. They did the jacket, and the jacket's on, like, heavy-duty cardboard. It's not, like, flimsy like it was in the old days, and it's all got this ultraviolet coating on it, and, you know, so it's pretty cool. And then the inner sleeve, which, again, they agreed to do it, even though they don't do it anymore. They charge us a lot more money, but that came out spectacular. I mean, it's just vibrant, and it just jumps at you, as well as the cover itself. And then, of course, the vinyl itself, it's, you know, 180-gram vinyl, that's like a little over 6 ounces.
Wow.
Or 7 ounces, you know. And not only is the music heavy, but the record is heavy when you pick it up.
Yeah, I believe it.
I thought I was going to break my shoulder, you know. back in the old days, you know, you pick it up, it weighed nothing. It was like,
right.
You know, because it was on ground-up, you know, they used to make records out of ground-up dinky toys and waste and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it didn't weigh anything. This weighs, you know, a quite substantial amount. So, you know, and it brought me back again to the good old days of albums where you picked it up, you looked at it, there's something you could have and hold, you didn't have to put on reading glasses to look at anything. You know, so it's quite a, I guess for lack of a better word, an achievement that we actually were able to put it all together and have and hold it, because I didn't even have an old copy of that record, so, you know,
really?
I'm happy to have this one.
That's interesting. All right, now you mentioned what an undertaking it was to make this album, but I was curious, and I know that's an understatement, but I was curious if we could expect another vinyl record, perhaps for 1983's Never Surrender or any others.
You know, that's a good question. We haven't really addressed that, you know, as a plan or anything. You know, I think the overall feeling is let's put this one out, see how it's received by the fans. If there's a demand from the fans for it, then, you know, we'll make more. But, you know, just to do it for the sake of doing it, I don't think so. It's way too much work. But
really?
If the fans want it, I'll, you know, I'll go through it again.
All right. Now, what about recording a new album, be it on vinyl or, dare I say it, a CD version? Has that been given any consideration, Mike?
No, we've never really chatted about that. The chats really are about whether we're ever going to tour again or not, which we keep having those chats and never come to a conclusion. But as far as making new product, I don't think that's going to happen unless we have, you know, 10 exceptional songs. And then that may make sense. If we go on the road, I would be a proponent of doing 2 or 3 studio tracks and just putting them out digitally or on an EP or something like that. But, you know, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mention the tour dates because you know that I was going to ask about it. I mean,
you and everybody else.
Yeah, because I mean, I asked you about this last year, and I know it's like the burning question on every Triumph fan's mind. But, you know, do you think maybe you guys might go out in 2012, Mike? I mean, especially in Canada, in Ontario, where the band originated.
You know, it's a lot of work to tool up to go on the road. And without, you know, having a multitude of dates, like I'm talking like 40 to 50 dates throughout North America, it's really not worth it on two levels, the time investment and the financial investment. So that being said, of course, you know, we did have, after we played those two shows in 2008,
right.
We did have a tour book for 2009. And we're in the process of finalizing all the arrangements, and then the economy went totally south. And guess what? Here we are again doing the same thing. You know, there goes the economy. I opened the paper the other day. They're talking, you know, everything's down the proverbial crapper again.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't want to go out unless we know we're going to do well. And it's one thing to fight other bands on the road for ticket money and attendance and stuff. It's another thing to fight the economy. It's that to me is, you know, could be a very bad losing battle, especially in America as opposed to Canada.
Yeah, especially right now. But, you know, I mean, I find it hard to believe that if Triumph were to announce that they were willing to go back out on the road, that organizations wouldn't be chomping at the bit, banging your door down, saying, headline. You don't have You don't have to share the proceeds with anybody. Just come here and play. And I know there's probably every venue in Canada would open their doors to Triumph and give you guys all the proceeds of the money without having another band on the bill, maybe an opening band, you know, and have you guys headline. I can't imagine that it would be that difficult to find people who want Triumph.
No, but like I say, back in 2008, or for 2009, which was only a couple of years ago, you know, that wasn't an issue, especially in Canada. I mean, Live Nation, Riley O'Connor, who's the chairman of Live Nation Canada, is also a friend. We spent hours and hours with our agent here just figuring out where to play, you know, what the ticket price was going to be, how to route the tour. I mean, we had buildings on hold. All of, you know, we had two dates on hold at the Air Canada Center. You know, that wasn't an issue then or shouldn't be an issue now. There was a little bit of momentum behind us then because that was the year of the Hall of Fame thing with the Juno Awards, and there was lots of press about us. So I don't think that would be an issue for Live Nation to play or not to play, or to pay or not to pay, I should say.
Yeah.
Even back then, Riley, he said, I don't care who the opening act is. It makes no difference. People are going to come see Triumph. They're not going to come see some package.
Exactly.
That's all anybody would care about.
Exactly. And so don't you think, though, even with the recession, I mean, kids are still going out and going to live shows. You don't think kids would pay $45 or even $60 to see Triumph? I know I would.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm not technically in that business anymore. But, you know, again, it's kind of like the key to us, if we go out, is to we want to sell out everywhere. And quite honestly, that's the only way you can make the kind of money that we'd have to make just to, you know, to put the show out there the way we want to do it. So, you know, the last most of the money for an artist that plays is in the last 15 to 20% of the ticket sales. So if you do 14,000 people out of 16,000 people, that's 2,000 tickets that are not sold. That basically you're not making any money. You know, you're not. All you're doing is paying your bills.
Wow.
So that's an issue. So, you know, for us, we want to know that we could sell out or be darn close to it.
Well, see, now I'm convinced you would sell out, but then who am I, right? I'm just on the Big Rock Show. I don't know about all this stuff, but I just know the thousands of fans, you know, that have been diehard Triumph fans that are just chomping at the bit to have you guys play somewhere and see you. I mean, it's just a shame.
Oh. Well, hopefully, like I say, hopefully, you know, something will turn in that direction and we'll be able to do that. I don't think any of us are really opposed to it, you know, as an ongoing thing, but it's just a question of the timing.
All right. Fair enough. Well, thanks for answering that so well, Mike, because I know you guys get asked that every time you do an interview, and I hate to be one of those people, but I appreciate you taking the time and really responding to it.
No problem. I think it's good for the fans to understand that it's not just, hey, you know, we're just going to go rehearse for a day and then go play Air Canada Center. You know, that's not going to happen that way.
Right. Well, you guys have come too far now to have it go down like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'd have to rehearse for a couple of months. We'd have to put the whole production together, you know, a road crew, you know, lights, effects, pyro, lasers, the whole nine yards. And that's a, you know, 6-month project.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, is there anything else in the works, anything else going on with Triumph or anything coming up that you can share with us today?
I got my thinking cap on. I don't think so. I think that, you know, I need a break after this Allied Forces thing. And I don't think there's anything upcoming that I can share with anybody at this point.
Okay. And how about any messages for your fans out there? Anything you'd like to say to them?
Oh, well, for the fans, of course, they're the best fans in the world. You know, it's Triumph fans are, I think, the most hardcore, dedicated fans you'll ever find, and we're quite honored and humbled, actually, by the fact that we have them, and we hope they stay with us, and they're happy with what we're at least trying to do to keep the flame burning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. It's always a pleasure having you on the Big Rock Show.
All right. Thanks, Dana. Appreciate it. Always great to be with you.
I hope you come back again.
Well, I'll always be glad to be back if you'll have me.
Anytime. The door's open anytime, Mike.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Dana.
You know what you've got.
Hi, this is Mike Levine from Triumph. You're listening to the only chick that really rocks, Tina, on the Big Rock Show.
Fight the good fight, everybody.
The Big Rock Show. New music, interviews, and much more. Find us at thebigrockshow.net or on Facebook, facebook.com/The Big Rock Show. The Big Rock Show, baby. Oh, yeah.